Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome everyone to this second episode of Fishology. We'll be giving you advanced stats from your 2022 Marlins players. I'm joined here tonight first with Lewis. Lewis, how are you doing?
I'm good, Danny. What about you?
I'm doing great, doing great. And then Adam, who just finished his dinner. He had a bomb dinner, and he came in to do this podcast. Adam, first off, how was that dinner?
It was fantastic, man. Had some good lo mein noodles, and now we're here to talk about some Marlins baseball, so could not be more ecstatic to do so.
Awesome. Well, for that first episode, we talked about Sandy. We really enjoyed that episode. So we're going to do this more on a bi-weekly basis. And for tonight's episode, we'll be talking about Jazz Chisholm Jr., one of the best young players in the Marlins, one of the best second basemen in baseball. Had his season cut short due to injuries. So we'll be talking about Jazz, advanced stats, and a potential contract extension. First off, some stats for Jazz this year. Only playing in, I believe, 60 games this season, having a WAR of 2.5, one of the highest in the Marlins, despite playing only 60 games. Lewis, talk to me about Jazz this season and his limited sample size.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think, you know, obviously it was a shortened season because of the lower back strain, and then what turned out to be a torn meniscus was later revealed he was playing through that. When you look at, I guess, the changes that he made going into 2022, there was definitely some signs of growth. He gradually upped his walk rate. I believe he was walking about 9% of the time this season after walking just under 7% last year. So, you know, that's an improvement you wanted to see from a guy. I believe he walked less than 30 times his rookie year, which, again, not encouraging, but when you see the power-speed combination that he displayed as a 24-year-old, it was, you know, definitely something to build off of, especially when you consider that the team was nowhere near a playoff contender in 2021. So you kind of felt that, like, if he took a big step forward, that he would further assert himself to be a member of that core. But, yeah, you know, the power kind of further manifested itself, which was great to see. You saw him barreling up more baseballs.
Anderson's first pitch to Jazz is hit in the air and sent out to fairly deep right field. That one's going to carry off the scoreboard on the first pitch of the game. Jazz all over it, and it's 1-0 Marlins. Jazz gets into one out towards center. Way back there, way back, and it's gone! A grand slam for Jazz!
We know the defense that he gives you at second base, but, yeah, I mean, not to say that he would have made them a playoff team had he stayed healthy, because obviously only one player can only do so much, and one player does not make or break a season. It's a collective effort, especially in a sport like baseball. But I think the improvements that he made, you know, albeit in a smaller sample size, are very encouraging. Jazz is just maybe that guy right now in a kind of like sea of nobodies for this Marlins team from the position player standpoint.
Yeah. Adam, I know you're a big Jazz believer. We'll go into the contract talk and maybe your number compared to Lewis's later on the podcast. But give me a little description of your thoughts on Jazz and maybe some advanced stats you see from Mr. Chisholm that might stand out to you.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of like we see with Jazz Chisholm, he's for me of a three-tool player in the sense that he's got the power, he's got the speed, and he's got the glove to play second base. The reason why he's at second, not at shortstop, and actually learned later is because he has a very, very poor throwing arm, right? So that's limiting him to the right side of the diamond, and he's not the best. He doesn't have the greatest feel for hitting either. And we've seen this play out through the course of his professional career. He is quite a chaser, and he doesn't make a lot of contact in the zone as well. We're seeing him have a lot of struggle with his bat path, which for me is an alarming issue for him going forward. But I think overall, I do like the profile, and I still think that he projects to be arguably the second best, or arguably, sorry, the best second baseman in baseball at some point in his career. Like you said, Danny, he put up 2.5 wins above replacement through 60 games. So obviously you can't really prorate WAR and make it really mean something, but just for simplicity's sake and just to kind of map something out and eyeball, it's about 5 or 6 wins that he would be putting out over the course of a full year. And if
Adam, not to cut you off, but if you go by the BREF definition of the WAR that he put up, over 162 game pace, he's worth about 6.8 wins. And then if you prorate his WAR on a Fangraphs basis, which I believe it was 2.3 or 2.4, you're looking at 6.2. So like you said, he's about a 6-win player. And that's valuable. If you go by Fangraphs dollars to WAR, that's about $50 million a year in value. Now, he's not a $50 million player because he's not in that echelon of player that you feel comfortable giving that deal to. But, as we'll later discuss, and like you said, he was definitely playing at a pace to further justify why he was an all-star in 2022.
Yeah, no player receives a $50 million contract per year, but also he would also just be receiving an arbitration eligible contract that's cheaper because they would be trying to buy out his ears early on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely with Jazz, you got to remember, everyone knows that he is amongst the best players, the best young players in all of baseball. And I think really the reason you would only see them not trying to pay him right now is because I think the front office might just be worried about his injury or his health status, right? We've seen him miss over 100 games this year, and in last year he missed 40-something games, or almost 40. It's been something you got to understand. I think we talked about with one of my friends. I was discussing this earlier that on the Marlins side, you take what I just said into account, but on Jazz's side, and his camp is going to be saying his rotational athleticism, that's part of his, basically the name of his game, and his ability to kind of play all over, is a selling ticket and a selling point because he's a shortstop and a smaller guy. So if he's going to tap it into that power, he's going to be continuing to be athletic, but they're going to try to buy into that selling point that he's going to be, and bet on the fact that he's already going to be reaching it rather than not, based on the fact that he's already showed out. So I really like Jazz, and he's definitely gonna be worth something a lot, and whenever he does receive a free agent contract. And I think I do buy the bat to some extent, but I think it's going to be safer rather than something that's going to doom him eventually.
I was going to mention about Jazz, and I want you guys to tell me a little bit about his DRS, what that means, and maybe his average compared to maybe other shortstops or second basemen also in the league. I was looking here. His defensive run saved for 2022 is 2. So I don't know if you guys can discuss maybe what that number means, having a 2 for a second baseman, and what DRS means overall.
Per what he's done defensively, the average for each position is 0. It's the baseline for everything defensively. 0 is average. Being that he had +2 this year would just mean that he collectively saved about 2 runs on defense by way of his glove. If you want to talk about his defense and translate that over to shortstop, I think you're looking at a less valuable player. I think, too, when you look at the offensive profile, especially of shortstops now relative to second basements now, Jazz is a lot more valuable when you talk about him. And probably the best bet for him to get a bigger contract would be to market himself as a second baseman, because he definitely makes a lot of very flashy plays, but there are times where you do see that the routine play can be a bit of a problem for him, because he does tend to overthink a little bit, as far as what I've seen with some plays. Maybe if he's trying to just make it look flashy, you know, like say Chopper coming up the line and he's just like trying to get the ball to first base, make it look like all smooth and sexy, and it just doesn't work. He is prone to doing that every once in a while, but, you know, most fielders are. But regardless, I mean, he's a better defender at second base. And if you're going to ascribe value to DRS, I think you best, you know, would want to see him play second base, because I think that's where he's going to generate a lot of that value.
And this into center. Jazz Chisholm makes the play. What a grab by Jazz, just kind of floating out into center field and then reaching out and hanging on. A great defensive play.
Yeah, and Adam, I wanted to ask you almost the same thing in terms of how you view Jazz's defense and maybe what values or advanced stats on defense really stand out to you, or something that you're really looking at to tell if someone's a good defensive player or below average.
Yeah, so for me, I guess I'll talk about DRS for a little bit. It's simply just another metric where you can use, like Lewis mentioned, you have zero to really simplify it as your average, and then just plus and a minus above and below that is going to be above and below average. So if you've got like five and minus five, that means you're about a standard deviation, or a 60 or a 40, which is like your scouting metrics above or below the mean, right? And then if you've got, you know, more than that, you're fantastic. And if you keep going down, then you're really, really bad. So Jazz is right in that range where if he played a full year, he'd be about a 60, which is just in the range of potentially being a Gold Glover. And that's at second base. I think he's got the range to play shortstop. And we've talked about this before in our private chat. The reason why he's not playing second base, or sorry, he's not playing shortstop, A, is because Rojas is at shortstop right now. And he's just a fantastic Gold Glove caliber shortstop, whereas Jazz is likely just to be maybe an average to maybe slightly above average at short. And because Jazz just doesn't have the best throwing arm either. And I think if you saw him move to short, that could improve, but I did think it's fringy at best, and he's best served the second base. So, Lewis, you were right about that before, and I was wrong in terms of his throwing arm and why he shouldn't be at shortstop. For me, I think he's going to be just fine in terms of what he's going to receive in a contract. We saw guys like Ruedner Odor and, like you mentioned, Ketel Marte receive at least $50 million and Odor signed his deal, I think it was like four or five years ago. And I think his, contact profile is a lot scarier than Jazz. And that's saying a lot, because Jazz is a fringy hitter at best. And Rodor is just, even as when he was coming up as a prospect, was not the greatest player. So I think with Jazz, he's been pretty good as from a DRS range, and he's going to be a plus player. What I would really look at more is OAA, because there's not a really good way to quantify kinematically. We talked about this before, data for defense. So we see a lot of raw data for for pitching and for hitting. You know, we see exit velocity, we see spin rates, and that makes it really easy for us to kind of say, oh, okay, for statisticians and data guys to go and say, okay, we'll plug this in, and it gives us a really good number and a good ability to tell how good or how well someone is performing, just because it's just, you can't lie with raw numbers. Just like how when you get a speeding ticket, you can't lie when someone caught you speeding quickly. So I think with DRS, you really don't. With DRS, it's not something that you can really tell super well. And the best way we can see is OAA, which is directional fielding. And by that measure, he's also pretty good. But it's just that his arm strength is not the greatest, and he doesn't really let it fly from second base, and that's why he's at second. So overall, he's going to be fine. He's going to receive a nice payday, and I would really hope the Marlins go after him early. And right now, rather than later, because you're going to see him really perform and blossom into a superstar next year if he stays healthy. And then his price is not going to be cheap. Yesterday's price will not be today's price then.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about just why he will be an attractive player, and not even with projecting moving forward, but let's talk about what he's done so far. So when you look at Jazz, I want to give you, here's a trivia question. I believe I sent you guys my notes this morning. He's played 205 games to this point in his career. Can you name two of the three second basemen or shortstops to hit at least 30 home runs and steal 30 bases in a player's in his first 205 games? I'll give you the names, but I want to see if any of you guys could guess.
Wait, so you said his first 225 games, he's hit 30 homers?
No, so he's hit so he's hit 30 home runs, and he's hit, or he's hit, I believe he's hit 34 home runs, and he's stolen about 37 bases. Right. I don't have the exact number in front of me. But Jazz Chisholm, first 205 games, he's pretty much gone 30-30. 34 home, so he's hit 34 home runs, and he's stolen 37 bases.
Okay.
Can you name three second baseman shortstop to do that in their first 205 games?
Trevor Story is definitely one of them.
No, it is not. So
it's not. Wow.
Tatis? No.
Huh?
Tatis? Maybe. Yeah.
Tatis is one.
Tatis was hammering.
Probably Wood Jr. will do it next year, but obviously he's not there yet. Probably Wood Jr. will be.
He would need to hit about 10 very early, but so
yeah, okay, never mind.
So Danny, okay. so the three guys, second baseman, shortstop, in their first 205 games since 1901, since we have comprehensive game log data, to hit at least 30 home runs and steal 30 bases as a second
baseman. Is one of them A-Rod? One of them's A-Rod for
nope.
sure, right?
Nope.
No,
because he didn't get his first full season until 96. Second baseman, shortstop,
mm-hmm.
Fernando Tatis Jr., Nomar Garcia Parra, Alfonso Soriano.
Oh, okay. That's a nice list to be on.
So those are the three middle infielders to go 30-30 in their first 205
games. Let me ask you guys this. You mentioned Tatis, Garcia Parra, Soriano. Which of those three most likely projects Jazz Chisholm? Which one?
Now, I want you guys – here's another trivia question. Obviously, Tatis, of those four guys, if Jazz is included, has the best OPS of all of them because he slugs about 600 when he's on the field. If you look at those three preceding Jazz, there's literally like a low bar, which is Soriano, because Soriano, like Jazz, power, speed, no plate discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Garcia Parra, high contact, but power, speed, doesn't walk as much. He's a BABIP king. And then there's Tatis, who can kind of just do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
that's getting to the question that Danny's asking. The most similar player by OPS would be Soriano.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I think Jazz is a better defender than Soriano was as a second baseman? Because as we saw, Soriano wound up becoming a corner outfielder and not a good one. But the bat is what kept him in the big leagues, and he was about a 30 WAR player, over 400 home runs. Garcia Parra obviously was like, you know, a deity in Boston. Tatis Jr., you know. We don't have enough time to really espouse on him. But with that being said, regardless of what contract you give this guy with the numbers that we're likely to throw out to you, if he's any one of those three players, he will be worth it. But that is very interesting company to be in for the as far as production and the things that are the most sexy to baseball fans. Stolen bases, although they're kind of in vogue, or they're not in vogue given what analytics say about making outs on the bases, and power. And he's got both of those things, though I think he's very sloppy as a base runner. I think he could be better. He's better with his decision-making. But yeah, any of those three that he could turn into, and I don't think he'll ever be a Tatis type. I don't think he has the plate discipline, nor do I think he'll grow into that much plate discipline to be that type of hitter. But if he's a Garcia Parra type or a Soriano type or even an Ozzie Albies type who threw his first 205 games, a very similar slash line to Jazz Chisholm. 205 games for Jazz, he slashed 243, 305, 449. Ozzie Albies, 273, 323, 458. Again, better BABIP, so he's going to get more – his batting average will be higher. Walk just a little bit more, and the slug is – they're just about neck and neck with Jazz having an edge in stolen bases and power, but he's a 2020 guy. So that's going to lead me to the question of the contract. Albies, as we know, and if you follow baseball, especially in the NL East, you know that when he signed that 7-year, $35 million deal, given the skill set, it was a steal by Atlanta, and we've seen them continue to do that with Alex Acuña, Schrader, Harris. I mean, you know, Austin Riley may be the lone exception given, you know, his contract was over $200 million in guaranteed value. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Odor contract, which Adam touched on, which is 6 years, $49.5 million. Ketel Marte's deal, 6 years, and I believe $75.2 million. Could be wrong. Jazz, in my estimation, right now, if you were to avoid arbitration with him at the end of next year when he's first eligible, I would give him a deal of 7 years and $87 million. You would buy out, I believe you would buy out 4 years of free agency. And you can incentivize that deal. If he places in the MVP voting, if he has top five in MVP voting, you could give him theoretically $500,000 there. If you give him, $1 million if he wins. You can give him $100,000 if he wins Gold Gloves.
So you would have his AAV around 12.5 for Jazz.
For $87 million, yes. But again, incentivizing it. Would mean that
like all-star appearances,
yeah. MVP finishes, Gold Glove finalist, winning Gold Glove. If he wins a batting title, theoretically, I mean, you could throw things in there the way that Pujols' contract was filled with incentives, A-Rod's contract with the Yankees after 2007. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, maybe it incentivizes him to play better. You see a deal that goes instead of $87 million, he makes between $120 and $130 million.
Okay.
Am I fair in my estimation, given the comps that I've kind of just listed, or am I overselling or am I underselling what you guys think would at least be a fair deal to give him, a guy who's yet to hit free agency?
I think you're like, that's a pretty good AAV. I would say he's probably going to get somewhere in at least they should try to target for at least 6 years, I would say. And I think you're also in agreement with that. He should get around 80 million to 100 million. I think his best comp, Lewis, I think it's probably not best to comp him to guys from the very past. I think it's, even though the kind of output line, what you mentioned was a similar thing. I think we have metrics that can kind of better describe what a guy contemporarily would be receiving at the same position. Jazz would at least probably get double of what Ozzie's going to get, what Ozzie did get, and probably more. I think 65 million, or at least I think it would be 70 in this sense, 70 million would be not enough to retain his services for that long. I think you would have to pay him at least 80 to 90 million. And it would probably take at least 100 if I were to take a guess, and he would probably at least agree to do 7 years at that point. One other contract I was looking at, obviously it's not the same exactly because it's a, you know, obviously the player plays a different position and he's a different age. He's 3 years younger. It's Michael Harris Jr. Michael Harris, he just signed his deal earlier and he has a similar WAR output prorated as Jazz Chisholm. I like what you mentioned, Lewis, about incentives. I think that's something we're going to be seeing. That's going to be somewhat of a mediated middle ground between the Albert Pujols contracts that have busted, the Ronald Acuña, Ozzie Albies type very team-friendly deals, and then players getting upset at that. I think the Julio Rodriguez deal that we saw is going to be the help. It's going to be something that is going to be the perfect compromise for players going forward. You saw that they're going to pay him at least 200 and a quarter, I think, and he has a chance to make the most in Major League Baseball history. Obviously, that money will be eclipsed over the course of the next decade, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But right now, that's what the figure is. So, and I think Julio Rodriguez cannot scoff at nearly $500 million in money by that point. So I do like that figure that you gave for Jazz Chisholm. I do think that he is going to eclipse nine figures, and it's not something that is definitely out of the realm of possibility. I really do like Jazz, and I think he's definitely deserving of it. And I think you've seen him on social media. He's not going to sign for cheap. He's not going to take something that some, like maybe other guys have signed. He may not even want to go to free agency. I think it's going to be in the $80 to $100 million range. And with a lot of incentives going forward. And you definitely, you can bet that Kimming and the front office have kicked the tires on a deal like this. The front office has definitely tried to sign him or at least talk to him. They might not be at the money that Jazz wants at this point, or Jazz might not be willing to play ball at this juncture because he might want to wait until year six.
And let me ask you guys, you mentioned Jazz and maybe not wanting to go to free agency. So let's just say maybe he does, you know, they can come up with a deal. He wants to go to free agency. What type of deal can Jazz get in the open market? Would a team be willing to go over, like you said, $100, $105, $120 million to get Jazz, or even in the open market, he's still a player that will relatively get anywhere from $80 to under $100 million?
I'm sure somebody would be willing to pay him. I mean, obviously the Marlins. I mean, like if somebody were to be coming up to Jazz and calling him, if he were on their team, and to offer him what they would want, what he would want, and be willing to negotiate in that range, which I'm sure there are plenty of teams who, if they had team control of him, they would be willing to do that. It may not be the Marlins, and I think they would try to come to some sort of deal. And that deal, I think, absolutely could break into nine figures, and I think there are the teams that would be willing to negotiate in that range. Absolutely. I think, you know, Lewis gave his range. I guess mine, we looked at that Michael Harris deal, even though he's 3 years younger and plays center field, it's had similar output. That's what I'm looking at. Michael Harris Jr. signed for 8 years, $72 million. That's probably a figure that you could see Jazz receive down the road. I do think that Michael Harris is somewhat of an overrated bat. I think he's a worse hitter, actually, than Jazz Chisholm. He probably profiles us just because he's much more aggressive. I do worry about that. And I think his output this year, as his offensive output, was somewhat of an anomaly. And I don't believe that Michael Harris Jr. will be as good of an offensive player. I think he's going to be a fantastic defensive player. I just don't buy his offense. And I could be wrong, like I was about him this year. I didn't think he was going to be this good. But I don't project him to be good for this long. So that's why I think Jazz will receive more than 72. I think he'll receive at least 80, potentially more. And given the fact that Jazz is already a year or two into his arbitration years, Harris signed very, very early. I could definitely see Jazz receiving $100 million. And if he were in an open market where he would be, or at least not, it wouldn't be an open market situation, but if he were on another team and they had control of him, they would absolutely be willing to negotiate in the nine-figure range over the course of 7, maybe 8 years. Absolutely. And if I were a front office that had that kind of money, I would open the checkbook and negotiate in that range if he wanted it, which I wouldn't be surprised if that's the number he wants, the baseline, $100 million. And I think the number is only going to go up from there. I don't think he signs for anything less than that, unless it's, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now, Danny, I'll answer your question with regard to what he would get maybe in free agency. I think you need to step back and maybe look at the factors that would present themselves should he get the free agency and the Marlins don't come to a deal with him before the end of the 2026 season when he would hit free agency. We can expect that his next year, he's not going to be arbitration eligible until next season, the start of 2024. So he will get a pay raise there, although I don't know exactly how much. You're probably looking at, say, maybe I think he could realistically fetch about $10 million for a first-year ARB guy, even depending on the season he has. But at that point, it's like you'd probably just be better off signing an extension to give yourself that security. Now you could just kind of, you know, they say that the old adage is like, now you have your money, you can just kind of go out there and play. You don't have a lot to worry about. The thing that I think could work in Jazz's favor to, I guess, give him a little bit more leverage in terms of getting more money from the Marlins would just be the feasibility of the position player core. I talked about this before the show. They don't really have other guys playing every day that you look at and suspect, I see this guy here long term. They have guys who, in very small sample spurts, have shown encouraging signs that they could maybe be of value in the future, but not enough to where you're kind of even having the conversation about extending any of these guys. Nobody's having that conversation about the likes of a De La Cruz, of a Peyton Burdick, of, you know, a Jesus Sanchez. You know, the Marlins already have money committed to Avisaíl García, two more years of Soler. And, you know, they're not a big market team. So these are all things that you need to consider. Jazz would be 29 at the start of free agents at the start of the 2027 season. He's not, that's not old. It's not the Carlos Correa age that he's going to hit free agency at age 28, I believe. And a full, and in baseball years, a year, 1 year is almost like five, where that makes a world of difference with the potential money that you can get. And we know that Jazz isn't the kind of player that Correa is. That being said, you can't, it's very hard to project the kind of deal he'd get in free agency. And that's almost something like I would stray from, because it's like, for all we know, he could be a bust and he could be a one-win player at worst for the next 6 years. And if he is, and you give him $10 million, it's not the worst contract ever, but you're also not too happy he kind of gave that money out if he doesn't really kind of develop and blossom into the player that everybody envisions him to be because of the dynamic player that he's shown he can be. So I wouldn't even want to like put a figure on him in free agency, you know, in five or so years. Now, if you're talking now, if theoretically he's a free agent tomorrow, then I think the contract is the same that I posed earlier. I think he would get something in the range of 7 years and 85 to 90 million. Because I think there's still a lot more that he can unlock in his skill set.
So I kind of misunderstood the question that Danny asked completely, but I think I'm going to try to answer here. So with Javier, I think Javier Baez, as we talked about before the show, is probably the most similar, most recent comp you can make for Jazz Chisholm. And obviously what's going to happen over the next 4 years before Jazz hits free agency is a different story. We don't know what's going to happen. But I think if you estimate that Jazz continues to play and continues to develop into the star that we think he's going to be, and the way that we have, the way that he kind of has been developing though so far, I think you can kind of expect to have a Javier Baez type ascension over the course of the first 6 or 7 years of his career. That being said, Javier Baez signed a 6-year, $140 million contract this past offseason. There will be obviously inflation, and I mean, there has been, and there will be inflation from one contract to the next over the course of 4 years. So I do think that Jazz Chisholm, if he were to wait, would receive a contract in the AAV neighborhood of $20 to $25 million, just the same way that Javier Baez did. And potentially more if he were to be playing at the same rate right now. But I think he could be better than Javier Baez, just simply put, because Jazz Chisholm, I think, is a more disciplined hitter than Javier Baez. Obviously, Javier Baez is a much better defensive player, but I do think that Jazz is the safer offensive bet. So I do think he'll get paid more. I think you could see, potentially see him get paid as much as $175 million if he were to get better. And the sky's, you know, it really will go up from there. There really is no limit because he's so young. So it is kind of early to tell, and time will tell with Jazz Chisholm if he can stay in the field and if he can continue to curtail those strikeout numbers. He'll be a fantastic player. I already think he'll be a star. And like you mentioned, Lewis, he's really Miami's only offensive franchise cornerstone. It's unfortunate that guys like Lewis Brinson, Alfaro, Diaz, Harrison, Yamamoto, the list goes on and on with prospects, just did not pan out. The guys that they traded for and hoped that would actually fuel the rebuild. Sixto Sanchez. It for me, I think that doesn't really give him a lot of leverage in contract negotiations. But you do, but that is a good point that he is one of the only pieces. I think the last thing I'll say is that the way that another way you kind of go about estimating it, you can say he's got 4 years left of he's got 1 year left of pre-arbitration, and then he'll start receiving. He'll be able to go in the courtroom with his agent, and they'll be able to negotiate a better salary for 3 more years after that. And I think there's a chance he could make in the range of maybe 50 million if all goes well during the over the course of that time. So that's your first 3 years for 50 million. And then for those last three, which I'm assuming he's going to sign a 6-year deal, and it could be more. So if it's for you, Lewis, you estimated seven. So let's say four, you're trying to estimate how much value he'll be worth over those years. So if you, I think what we can do is take Javier Baez's, and Javier Baez is receiving an AAV of 23 million. So let's call Jazz 20 million to be safe. It would be 20 million over the course of 4 years. That would be eight plus your 50. That would be 130. So that's like a high bound of what its value, total value is. And obviously, because it's pre-arb, he would be receiving less than that. So for me, Jazz receiving that, receiving a kind of deal in the 80 to 100 million would be an absolute steal, just because he's definitely able of commanding a lot more based on what we've seen other guys receive. Like I mentioned, the 130 is kind of high, but that's just like a high bound of what he could get.
8 and 130 would be similar to the kind of deal that Freddie Freeman signed with the Braves,
mm-hmm.
Around the time they locked up the likes of Teron and Kimbrel in the early 2010s. It's not the worst idea. And I also think, too, if you say avoided arbitration on an 8-year deal like that next year, it gives the team some financial flexibility to kind of explore further augmenting the roster with names that could definitely help the team score more runs. I mean, the biggest concern, I think, with the Marlins is getting guys in the lineup that see a lot of pitches and get on base. They were last in the National League in walks this year. I think they would have maybe been a slightly better off if Jazz had stayed because of the metrics that we saw. His outside zone percentage as far as him swinging went down a little bit. He was walking slightly more, as I noted at the outset of the show. But what I'll say is this. The way I think of Jazz Chisholm right now, and I don't want to say this to mitigate, or not even just mitigate, to offset any of what I've said previously. You guys ever go on Amazon, or you're going on a website, you're doing online shopping, and you put something in your cart, but you're not 100% convinced that you want to purchase this thing?
All the time.
That is how I feel about Jazz being in Miami long term. Not because I don't think he's a great player, and I don't think he will be a great player. I firmly believe and hope, taking up the objective cap, being a Florida resident, that he will be. But I need to see a full season where he further builds on the gradual improvements he made in 2022 before we go ahead and anoint this guy as one of the faces of the franchise, though he, to many, he may already be. And again, it goes back to just the position player core not being what the organization envisioned at the outset of the rebuild 5 years ago. But give me a full season of everything that this guy can do, further build on what he's done, and then we can talk about extending him with true blue sincerity and fully committing to him long term.
Yeah. So, Adam, Lewis, any final thoughts mentioned about Jazz, maybe his 2022, what you saw, maybe his future before we ended off?
Right. I think I was somewhat high with my 130. I think he could receive 15. That's one thing I wanted to say. But you're right, Lewis. He is the face of the franchise. I still think we've seen him in the aggregate over the course of 162 games still produce quite a bit. Like, he'd still be very productive. Obviously, he was injured and he has been hurt for quite some time over the past 2 years since he's been a major leaguer. But I think this contract does mitigate that risk in there. If you were to sign him from that 80 to 100 million, and obviously like that 130 was somewhat higher. But I do think that is a safe range, and that is a contract I would pay him now. That is something before, and I would try to get him locked up early, because you're going to – we talked about this with Eli, and he mentioned earlier that you do want to get him now sooner rather than later, because the price is going to go up majorly as the season goes on, as he plays well, because he is a superstar caliber talent when he's healthy, and when he's not, I mean, when he can actually hit, when he has shown that he has been hitting this so far. So there really isn't, at least right to this point, no cause for concern. And I would pay Jazz as soon as possible. I think that is, for me, that is Miami Marlins offseason priority number one. But I don't think Kim Ng and company see it that way. And that's unfortunate, because he is probably the best offensive talent the team has had and the most exciting offensive player the team has had since Giancarlo Stanton.
All right. Lewis, do you have anything before we go?
I'll put it this way. If he sustains the 860 to, say, OPS that he put together in 2022, say he sits around 800 to 850, then, and if the defense holds, again, I have no problem extending him. But I would hope for the competitive future chances of this franchise that that's not the high bar for what we have offensively, and that we can maybe just, like I said, that this organization can get, you know, whether it's through free agency or we just see growth from guys in the minors and strides that guys who have already been in the majors show in the big leagues, that we could see somebody maybe match his production from an OPS standpoint, whether that's doing it a different one way or doing it another, walking more, hitting a lot of homers, whatever it may be. You kind of just hope that you kind of get more guys that can produce at, near, or slightly better than what Jazz is doing, and or at least what we last saw of him. And yeah, that's really all I have to say about that.
All right. That's going to do it for episode 2 of Fishology. We love talking stats, talking everything for the 2022 Marlins, everything. So remember, this is going to be a bi-weekly show. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We got to go into the lab and find out which Marlins player we're going to talk about next. But for myself, for Daniel, for Lewis, for Adam, for Eli, in the back doing all the work, this is Fishology. Thank you.